sometimes the mothers and the fathers, conditioned to think about this balanced diet concept, begin to worry, even though they've gotten their kids out of school, if they don't see an echo of the school day, you know, being duplicated.
Welcome to Radio Free School.
Hi, I'm John Taylor Gatto. I was a New York City public school teacher of junior high school kids for 30 years on the Upper West Side of Manhattan. In a corporate economy, you have one boss and 20 sub-bosses and 50 sub-sub-bosses. And that arrangement is only possible if people don't know how to escape their placement. Now, you can lie and say, well, they're inferior and they couldn't escape their placement. But my experience teaching for 30 years is that isn't true, that Harlem kids are capable of exactly the same quality of intellectual production as upper-middle-class white kids. I don't say that as a romantic or as a humanitarian. I say that as somebody locked up with children who hated the potential boredom possibility of the thing and decided to do a first-class curriculum with the poor ghetto kids. Now, I got a lot more trouble at first doing that, but the minute, you know, they caught on that you actually meant what you said, I mean, the minute you got over the adjustment period, the quality of the work was exactly as, you know, as high as it was with the so-called gifted and talented kids. And these were street kids from the ghetto. I can't be the only one who's discovered that. But what would you do if 54 million kids graduated every 12 years in the United States and every one of them had, as Napoleon advised, a field marshal's baton in his backpack? If everyone was looking for an independent livelihood, if everyone wasn't just willing to pick up a paycheck, but brought principles and moral standards and aesthetic preferences to the job and said, no, I won't do that. I mean, kids from first grade on are set against one another so that it's no surprise when they're adults, after 12 years of backbiting, competing, being placed in class relationships to one another, that you can't build a community. It's no surprise at all. Mm-hmm. That isn't done intellectually by saying, now wouldn't it be a good idea if we all work together? I mean, they've had 12 years of never working together. These are truths so fundamental that it almost embarrasses me to say them, except for the fact that people have been trained not to think about these things. They strike the virgineer as some radical statement. I mean, for God's sake, what can you do for the entire society? I think the answer is nothing except your best. You struggle, you argue. You don't expect any substantial change. But what you can do for yourself and your loved ones and your neighbors even is a great deal. It's not easy. It remains a struggle, but it's just so much more prideful and correct a way to live I mean, you don't live that way. You say, I prefer not to, to these other ways. And sometimes you submit because not submitting would exact a price that's way out of keeping with what you win from principle. Yeah, I mean, you act, I think you develop the mind of a saboteur. You look and move like everybody else. You don't draw attention to yourself, but from time to time, you find where the gears are meshing, and you put a nice handful of sand in them. The biggest handful of sand, though, will be with your three daughters. I mean, if they come to their majority with independent, critical minds, with a good attitude toward things, without an expectation of things coming easy, but in an enjoyment of the struggle of testing themselves, they'll have good lives. And in their having good lives, they'll be helping me and you and everyone else. You know, at some point, it'll happen after my lifetime, but at some point, you reach a critical mass of people who just won't accept the bullshit any longer, you know, and then things change. Now, what I just described is very, very hard for a nation, but it's not that hard for a neighborhood or a family or a community. I think that happens all the time, that we're in, if we could look down from Jupiter and see the communal life around the planet, we would see the communities making it. I don't know if any nation would see making it. And of the nations that I've seen in my life, I'm almost reluctant to say this because it sounds so perverse, but the damn French are closest to making it of any of the ones I've seen. I mean, they're absolutely impossible people. And if you're just thinking of your own comfort, as I did for decades, then they're not only hopeless, but you dislike them. But all of a sudden, if you see that quirkiness is a result of being real, I've taken on a great appreciation. I mean, the French are mean and spiteful and lots of other things. But you look at those farms and those farmhouses and those little farm towns in the south of France, for example, and you say, this unrelieved beauty and harmony, this couldn't have happened if people didn't have their heads screwed on the right way and understood what's really important.
I'm just wondering why? Why them?
They were caught between the impossible Germans and the impossible Germanic Brits there. I think it was the proximity to to these one and, well, both of them are absolutely murderous places. The Brits front the Germans as, you know, the great beasts of the last 200 years. But if you travel around the world and talk to people and they begin to trust you, England is the great terrorist nation on this planet, has been for a long, long time. And they go into orderly societies that get along okay, and they break the societies up in order to profit from the little fragments. And they set the children against their parents. That's, of course, another function of institutional schooling, and it's meant to be. Divide and conquer is the rule. What you don't want are mothers and fathers who would die for their kids. You don't want that. You want the first authority to be management, and you want people to be addicted to stuffing their faces. And, you know, that's, you want that because that makes them more manageable. Now you have an incentive that you control entirely, and you can give it or withhold it according to whether the behavior's compliant or not. What I've had a difficulty understanding, I like Canada quite a bit, but the quality of radio journalism, let's say, is quite high. Sometimes I'll drive across the plains in Canada at night and listen to the radio for hours, maybe. But I must say that as impressed as I am by that, I am in my encounters with the general public in Canada, mm-hmm. they're certainly unswervingly nice and polite, but I really come away disturbed. There's a mindlessness.
Mm-hmm.
Now, and I don't have a way to understand this high quality, you know, radio discussion and this mindlessness that bothers me.
Mm-hmm. So you find it more prevalent in Canada than in the
oh,
States?
Oh, yes. There's a, there's like a...
passivity?
Yes. Okay. Okay. Thank you for that. Yeah. Yeah. And kind of a horror at standing out from the crowd,
mm-hmm.
or expressing a contrarian opinion.
We'll be right back. listening to Radio Free School on CFMU.
There was a friend of mine who knew I was going to be speaking to you, and she had this one question she wanted me to ask you.
Sure.
And she said that her daughter, who's unschooled, she's now 12, does nothing but read on the couch all day long.
Okay.
And she had a problem with that because she felt that reflects
no,
the lack
no
of
problem with that. If the reading can be expanded into the areas of writing and speaking, I think the inevitable result down the line will be a good one. If it's just reading, though, if the girl's locked up and partly mute in the face of different people or, you know, different customs or different idioms there, then there's a real disability. But the way I would deal with that in the beginning is to actually talk with the kid and say, you're going to develop a huge repository of information and probably, you know, a wonderfully layered, complex mind. But now the product of that mind has to be heard. It's not uncommon to find the experience that someone who is merely developed in that area is roundly exploited by their coworkers, who can, you know, speak usually, but write also. But I would not be worried about a single-minded, as long as it gives way in time to some larger, I'll give you a radical example of that. Over the years, I would encounter a rather large, small fraction of the male population of schools who did nothing at all but read comic books. That is it. I guess they played computer games too, but comic books were an addiction, and they would read them through the school day and through the classes. And I would take them aside privately, and I'd talk to them, and I would say, I'm willing to cut you a deal where you don't have to do anything but read comic books. And almost all of them wanted to draw comic books. I said, but I will expect that you'll develop a professional proficiency in this, and right now, there's no evidence of that. Like, I would take a kid's comic drawing, and he'd be very proud of it, and it would pretty much look like the drawing in the original, but I would say, look at the original. And he said, I don't need to, I've drawn it. No, you haven't. Every one of your panels is exactly the same size. Look at the page you just drew. Every panel's a different size. I said, and every one of your panels contains all the heads and arms and feet of the personnel in the panel. And I said, look at the comic book. The hands will shoot out of one side of a panel and the head out of another one. I said, you're looking at that and you can't even see what you're looking at. I said, that is a drastic sickness. And it's been conditioned into you, you know, by standardization. The comic books aren't standardized, but you're standardized. I said, now, you can cut school and I'll give you a pass to do it. Go to the public library, but don't go with any friends. Take a stack of graphic art manuals off the shelf. A stack. Don't take one book down. Take eight or nine down and open them and start to learn what you're doing. I said, and if you reach the stage where you understand the structure of the comic book, I said, the next thing to do is to begin to study the economics of it. Who reads Spider-Man? Not everybody. And is it equally read in every one of the 50 states? I doubt it. Find out where it's read, what age group reads it, whether they have any distinguishing characteristics. And they will have. And the comic book will know where, who that profile is. But begin to look at this thing as a large, complex business. Where does the ink come from? Where does the paper come from? What are the stages in the production of a comic book? How do you crack into the business? What does it pay? What about ancillary rights for, you know, ashtrays with the Hulk on them or whatever? I said, you can spend the whole year and do nothing but comic books as long as it isn't just sitting there reading them. So year after year would have wonderful private curricula. And was the kid only learning about comic books? Of course not. Was using the comic as a window into, you know, a dozen different worlds. You have to show them. I mean, you don't need to be crazy about it. You have to show them the aspect of absolute death that's in the television set and the computer. You are a semi-hypnotized subject of a technology that absolutely, its regard for you is to make money. There is no charitable impulse in any of it. It's built to be obsolete. It's built to humiliate you if you can't afford to keep up with the generations. It controls your time, how you think, what you think about, which buttons you press in what sequence. It's other things too, but it's a conditioning device, and it's a very, very, very dangerous one. You can understand from the point of view of usually the mothers, but sometimes the mothers and the fathers, who've been conditioned to think about this balanced diet concept, and then they begin to worry, even though they've gotten their kids out of school, if they don't see an echo of the school day, you know, being duplicated. So I would say to their mother, have courage, trust your kids. They usually will surprise you, but use your superior experience, your capability of seeing the context, the big picture, to get them to do more than they otherwise would do in the area they want to do it. You know, make sure that it doesn't become merely a recreation and a killing of time, that they'll have goals, that they'll be able to do something better from having put this time in, or understand something better, not just a quadratic equation, but the origin and the use of a quadratic equation. Put this time in, or understand something better, not just a quadratic equation, but the origin and the use of a quadratic equation. The biggest hype, I think, in my life that comes through school is the highest form of thinking is problem solving. And that is very far from the truth. Problem solvers are valuable people who often cause hideous problems because they don't understand that their problem is part of a much more complex context, and that by solving their problem, they make things considerably worse. The example I usually use, because my mind is getting old and incapable of thinking of others, but there's lots of examples. The one I usually use is the problem that was set to America's best biological scientists, I think during the Second World War, but don't hold me to that, which was come up with a bug spray that kills all the bugs so we can double and triple and quadruple food harvests. And they did. They did. They solved the problem. It's called DDT. And by 1960, the whole food chain on the planet was threatened by the accumulation of this poison that didn't biodegrade and past some point caused sterility, you know, and people to grow three noses, whatever. So by solving the problem, which they did brilliantly, they put life on the planet at peril. You see what I mean about problem solving?
Totally.
The great thinkers are the people who think in contexts and understand the historical and the economic, the philosophical, the religious, the social aspects of what they're thinking about.
Right. Yeah.
So that they can judge whether a problem should be solved or forgotten, or lots of stages in between.
Yeah. The end.
I'm gonna wrap myself in paper. I'm gonna daub myself with glue. Stick some stamps on the top of my head. I'm gonna mail myself to you.
Contact Radio Free School at grassroots@hwcn.org or mail P.O. Box 19, 1280 Main Street West, Hamilton, Ontario, Canada, L8S1CO.